Something big almost happened in Maine this week.
Now to the debate over whether sex work should be decriminalized. It's a proposal that has lawmakers talking.
State laws across the country, with the exception of Nevada, of course, state that participating in the sex trade is fully illegal. But in Maine, there was an attempt to partially decriminalize prostitution with the intent of helping survivors of sex trafficking.
That's Liz Crampton. She's a reporter covering state policy for Politico, and this week was watching to see if Maine's governor, Janet Mills, would sign that measure into law, adding momentum to a nationwide lobbying campaign pushing states to combat commercial sexual exploitation by reducing penalties for those who sell sex and increasing punishment for people purchasing sex. But on Tuesday,
she vetoed that legislation because she was swayed by divisions within the anti-trafficking community on what is the best approach to deal with this problem.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today,
this is a very difficult issue to talk about. And there's so many different arguments and so many different approaches to, like, what is the best way to tackling this, which is inevitably why Governor Mills didn't feel comfortable signing this bill.
Liz Crampton on the complex fight over legislation involving sex work, sex trafficking, and protecting victims of the sex trade playing out across the country.
We're seeing a lot of pimps and traffickers recruit victims from Maine, often in rural areas, but maybe also some of their larger cities, and send them down to some of the major cities along the East Coast, such as New York or Boston.
Between 2007 and December of 2018, the National Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline has received more than 440 calls from Maine and identified at least 55 cases where trafficking likely happened.
I was sex trafficked as a runaway. I was 15 years old, living on the streets in Biddeford at the time.
I didn't realize what had happened to me for 16 years. It took me 16 years to even know there was a name for what happened to me.
So it's not just that sex trafficking is moving through the state of Maine, but it's often beginning there with victims who are often women and girls with low income being taken into the sex trade and trafficked from Maine to other states.
That's right. You could think of it as, like, you know, the beginning of what is an underground network that, you know, runs all the way down the East Coast and throughout the country.
Trafficking is a legal definition. It involves force, fraud, or coercion by another person who is benefiting from the person being sold for sex.
You know, the question that I get asked a lot is, why don't people leave? If the pimp is threatening your siblings, your pets, your mom and dad, or somebody, that whatever a pimp needs to use to hold you captive, if that's through love, if that's through fear and torture, they're going to do that to keep you.
So just a lot of times we'll hear of victims that are rescued when they're on the, you know, 19, 20-year-old, and they've been in trafficking bondage since they were 9 and 10.
It's a lot of vulnerable people in vulnerable communities, a lot of LGBTQ members, a lot of women and girls and immigrants are the people who are often coerced into sex trafficking.
Liz, you've been reporting on a legislative push to try to help victims of sex trafficking in Maine by changing the way the state treats prostitution criminally. What exactly would this bill have done?
So the bill is intended to partially decriminalize prostitution with the goal of helping people that are trapped in the sex trade. So it would do that by reducing criminal penalties for those who sell sex, at the same time increasing punishment for people purchasing sex.
So a measure like this wouldn't legalize, like, the industry of sex work, but it would decriminalize offenses committed by people who have been sold into the sex trade?
That's right. And it would also provide career opportunities and social services for those survivors as well to help them, you know, get back on their feet once they escape the sex trade.
You mentioned that there's a debate within the anti-trafficking advocacy community over what exactly is the right approach to the issue. What is the argument for a measure like this one that partially decriminalizes prostitution?
So advocates that are pushing what's called this equality model believe that the best way to help survivors is to take away the fear of criminal punishment and prosecution, to be able to tell them, if you come forward, you're not going to get jail time, you're not going to get fines. Instead, we're going to help you, you know, get back on your feet. And it would also increase punishments for, you know, pimps and traffickers and sex buyers, to put the, you know, more of the punishment on them. You know, they are the ones who are perpetrating this underground network, not the sex sellers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's some people, some advocates actually within, you know, the anti-trafficking community that believe that it would actually entice more people to engage in prostitution or, you know, be involved in sex trafficking because it would take away the punishment.
So on Tuesday, the governor of Maine, Janet Mills, came down against this bill, vetoed it. What did she say ultimately swayed her against it?
She said that she wasn't convinced that the bill provided the best path forward in dealing with Maine's major trafficking problem. And she was swayed by some divisions within, you know, the anti-trafficking community in Maine in particular, who were afraid that sex traffickers could use, you know, partial decriminalization as a way to entice more people into the trade. You know, she thought that those pimps and traffickers would be able to tell people, you know, what you're doing is not a problem, it's not against the law, you're safe, which is a belief that other advocates think is, you know, a real misconception.
So we've been focusing on Maine here because, as advocates put it to you, if this were signed into law, it would have been huge. But you've also reported that this is part of a nationwide push, and other areas have considered or implemented big changes to the way they treat prostitution and try to fight sex trafficking. Where else are we seeing similar efforts?
So we've seen legislation that adopts this equality model that failed in Maine be introduced in states like New York and Louisiana, both states that have very major trafficking problems, but neither of those bills have advanced. The Maine bill was truly a landmark in that it was passed by the legislature.
Uh-huh.
But just last week, actually a few days before Governor Mills vetoed the Maine bill, Hawaii enacted a law that also attempts to help sex trafficking survivors. It doesn't go as far as the Maine bill, but what it does is it removes the statute of limitations for sex trafficking. That time frame was previously 6 years. And it also decouples sex buyers from people selling sex. Before this law was enacted, those two were conflated, and alleged offenders could be found guilty of the same crime. It would start to recognize that, you know, the people who perpetrate sex trafficking are not necessarily the sex sellers, but actually the pimps and traffickers themselves. So while it does not partially decriminalize, you know, sex selling and, you know, survivors of the sex trade, it provides one step forward to perhaps eventual partial decriminalization.
Given the fact that Hawaii passed this law and that Maine lawmakers at least approved the measure there, but then also the fact that it was eventually vetoed and, you know, there's this debate over the best approach to fighting trafficking, what do advocates say is next here? Because we are, in a lot of ways, seeing a shift in the way people think about these issues, right?
We definitely are. You know, a huge reason why this Maine bill passed is because of the work of advocates for these victims and lawmakers who have been really focused on dispelling myths about sex trafficking. And that's led to a major change in the way that the public thinks about the realities of this network. But, you know, part of the difficulty in dealing with this problem is, you know, prostitution is regulated by the states. You know, taking a state-by-state approach is how you combat the issue. It's not really going to happen on Capitol Hill in Washington. It's going to happen, you know, in a piecemeal approach across the country. And legislation, you know, was considered the best way forward. But with this veto, I think it's going to send a lot of people back to the drawing board about how can we help survivors of sex trafficking, get them out of this, and really, like, reduce the problem.
Liz Crampton, thanks so much for talking with me.
Of course.
Also, today, the Congressional Budget Office says the federal budget gap will widen to $3 trillion this year as the pandemic continues to grow the deficit. The CBO's latest 10-year projections released on Thursday show nearly triple the shortfall recorded just 2 years ago, which is significantly wider compared with earlier projections due to the enactment of President Biden's $1.9 trillion pandemic relief package, which Democrats approved in March without Republican support. The gap totals about 13.4% of GDP, making it the second largest discrepancy relative to the size of the economy since World War II, exceeded only by the 14.9% shortfall logged last year. And Washington, D.C.'s attorney general has subpoenaed Facebook for records related to the platform's handling of coronavirus misinformation as part of a previously undisclosed investigation into whether the tech giant is violating consumer protection laws. D.C. AG Carl Racine is calling on Facebook to release by the end of next week an internal study it conducted looking into vaccine hesitancy among its users. The subpoena, which was filed in late June, also calls on Facebook to provide records identifying all groups, pages, and accounts that have violated its policies against COVID misinformation and documents detailing how many resources the tech giant has devoted to the cause. A Facebook spokesperson did not immediately offer comment on the subpoena. The Politico Dispatch team includes senior editor Raghu Manavalan, senior producer Jenny Ament, and executive producer Irene Noguchi. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.